Good morning. It's now 9 o'clock, and we do have a quorum as I size up. This is the, I call to order the Finance and Administration Committee. We all here. As I call the committee to order, we will have two presentations this morning. Is there a question regarding the agenda? If hearing none, is no objection, the agenda stands approved. Let me start with the minutes. Are any questions regarding the minutes? Is there a motion? Second. Second by Mr. Giancola, moved by Mr. Costa. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. Let me start by indicating that Mrs. Hines is not here. She has regrets not being here. She's not feeling well today, and it is substantial enough that she does not want to impose it on anyone else, nor can she be here. This is a very important meeting. This is the presentation of a general manager's budget. And while there has been conversation some ways about this budget, this is truly the general manager's budget. It is coming to the board to be approved in the prescribed time frame that you have before you today. It is our opportunity as a board to receive the budget, and it will be our responsibility to approve a budget framed as passed from the general manager to the board. Mr. Searles will present the budget, and there is a detailed presentation that you have received and the discussions that we need to have. I think we both will ask that if you will hold your comments during the presentation, allow Mr. Searles to get through the presentation of the budget, and there will be ample time for questions and discussions. Thank you very much, Mr. Searles.
Good morning. As the chair said, I want to talk about both the operating and the capital budget, and then really would appreciate the discussion that we have after I complete my presentation. Just as this proposal, the general manager's proposal, is one step along the process to adopt a budget, my proposal, public hearings come, and then the board decides what they want to adopt as a budget. This is also, the FY13 budget is one step along the way of rebuilding Washington Metro. And I just want to turn back a relatively short time to less than 2 years ago where we were. It was after a number of accidents. The FTA had come in with 10 recommendations to how to improve the safety at this organization. The NTSB, because of a series of incidents, had 27 recommendations. We were hunkered. We were down. We were bunkered as an organization, siloed. It was clear that years of not making the required investments, both in the infrastructure as well as deferring maintenance, had taken its toll on the Washington Metro. And we set about, the board and staff set about as aggressively as possible, trying to turn the corner, create a new foundation from which we could then rebuild this system. In that time, we have begun to create an organization by reorganizing to some extent, but more importantly, adding staff, adding outside resources to turn the corner. I'm pleased to say that just yesterday I received a letter from the FTA which said that they closed all 10 items of the recommendations that they had made to us. We've closed all 10 items by a lot of work over the last 2 years. Similarly, with the NTSB recommendations, we have submitted last year recommendations for closure of half the items, 27 items, and we'll continue to work at the others. We have turned around. We've gone through some tough times with regard to escalators especially. Reaching a low of 80%, 82% availability this past summer as we went from a repair when it's broken approach to a preventive maintenance approach. And over the last few months, we've started to climb back, and we see escalator availability up at 88%, 89%. And importantly, when you look at why other escalators are out of service, two-thirds of them are out of service because of preventive maintenance. We're now doing the right program. On the capital side, we were spending about $400 million investment in fiscal year 2010. We increased that investment in 2011 by 50%. In FY12, which we're halfway through, it looks like we're going to increase that investment rate another 40 to 50%. That represents considerable acceleration and improvements to the Washington Metro system. But we are just beginning to dig out of the hole. In order to do that, we had to take an organization that was not properly staffed to accomplish what we have to accomplish, in some respects not properly organized. The safety culture was not there. And all of that had to be turned around at the same time we were accelerating the investment. And we had to rely on a lot of overtime by our workers to accelerate that investment, to start turning around the maintenance practices here and doing the maintenance that we have to do. We are not at the end of that road. We are still in the early part of that road. But at least we have begun to turn around and climb out of that hole. And this budget that I present today, it's another step along that way. It's not the end of the road. The safety culture is not in place. It's, you know, well underway, but it's not. All the maintenance practices are not in place. All the resources are not in place. But this budget, again, is another step along the way to bring it so we get back Washington Metro back to the top of the heap where it belongs. So having said that, let me turn to the FY13 budget. This budget not only continues the improvement in maintenance and operations that we've been working on for the last 2 years, complying with NTSB requirements, because remember, the NTSB not only critiqued our lack of investment and the need to make capital investment, but also critiqued the fact that we needed to improve our monitoring and maintenance practices with regard especially to the automatic train control system. This budget adds resources in order to do that. There has been much discussion about security on the system, and although we have relatively low crime rates, this budget does a couple things. It adds more police to the bus system. It also increases the amount of policing of the rail system, and it accepts the cost of the anti-terrorism unit, which had been previously paid for by the federal government. It improves our capacity to perform rolling stock maintenance, especially on our rail cars. When I got here, we were having about 850 cars available for service most days. We've increased that to 860. We have to increase that again as we go to the blue, the orange line changes coming July. And frankly, we have to get ourselves back up to the goal of 50% eight-car service, which means increasing the availability of cars every day for service. In order to do that, we have to provide the resources to do the maintenance. I mentioned escalator preventive maintenance. We intend, this budget proposal does not cut services. It maintains Metro Access services. It maintains the bus services. In fact, there's some improvement in priority bus services in a minor way. And it also, in addition to all that I've talked about before, it prepares for the Silver Line service. We are increasing the Washington Metro system by 10%. We have to have the people to operate that. We have to have the people to maintain that. When we take it over by the end of calendar year 13, we have to have our people trained and in place and ready to go. The budget itself, we show at the bottom $116 million growth in the budget. And it's due to the things I just mentioned. Importantly, the Silver Line, improving our preventive maintenance, having the resources to do it and not relying on so much overtime to do it. Fatigue management is a concern, and we're going to address that. But that means more people in order to reduce the overtime and still maintain the pace, even somewhat accelerate the pace of improvements that we've been at. In order to do that, we have a revenue base that space is, we project in FY13 will be pretty much flat, a slight decrease in revenue, mainly due to less passengers on the Metro Rail system due to the economy, offset in part by increases on the bus side. In order to handle the $116 million growth, I'm proposing that $66 million to cover the portion of the growth as well as to make up for the $3 million shortfall in revenue of FY13 over FY12 come from fares, and the remainder come from the jurisdictions. As you note on the previous slide, there was $5 million, which in cost efficiencies that we introduced since Carol presented the budget, but this is on top of over $200 million in savings that has been approved by this board over the last 3 to 4 years. Some of it was one-time savings, but a lot of it was sustainable, including cost restructuring, where costs that properly should have been in capital were moved out of operating into capital. When we look at the next slide, when we look at the budget growth, when we look at the existing operations, if you will, there's an increase of about $61 million. A good portion of that is in pension and fringes, and most of that pension and fringes is pension, about $29 million worth on the operating side. That comes about as a result of needing to adequately fund the pension system, and I'll talk about that a little bit on the next slide. But in addition to that, you see the other parts of the pie, things I've mentioned before, Silver Line service, getting ready for that, as well as focusing on a number of things to further improve the system, which are listed there and which I previously mentioned. Let me talk about pension a little bit. This slide, these columns, if you will, show in the different jurisdictions that support us what the actuarial present value is of a pension on average when a person retires from the particular organizations. And with regard to AMADA, we're focusing on the local 689 pension, which is a defined benefit pension. And, of course, most of our employees fall into that category. If you look briefly at the columns, ignoring whether it's above or below the zero line, I'll get to that in a moment, you see that we have a robust pension, but it's not out of line with some of the other pensions in this region. DC, I understand, is a defined contribution pension system, so it's much more modest than the others. What's important here, and what's unique about really WMATA, is when you look at employer versus employee contribution. In most of the other jurisdictions with equally robust plans, the employee contributes part of the pension cost, to the part of the pension cost. At WMATA, it does not. This goes back to the early 1980s in the collective bargaining when a decision was made that WMATA would make the full contribution for the funding. Obviously, like everywhere else, over the last few years, with the economy being where it is and the stock market being where it was, we've had to kick up the contribution. Now, this isn't done all in 1 year. It's smoothed out over a few years, like others do. But for fiscal year 13, it means, on the operating side, close to a $29 million in contribution just to maintain the funds for the pensions. I might add that in my budget proposal, there is no proposal for wage increases in FY13, only to cover the pension fund. Need resources in order to accomplish the capital plan that we agreed to with the jurisdictions when we signed up for the capital funding agreement. We have to rely less on overtime to accomplish it, and we still have to maintain and actually increase the pace to make the improvements that we need to get the system back into operation. We also have to account for and bring on board during FY13 the staff, the maintenance staff, the operating staff, as I said before, to be in place, to be fully trained, and to be able to operate the Silver Line. We're adding 10% to the system, the route miles. Those are two important factors in the need to increase staff here. More service, significantly more service with the Silver Line, as well as the continued rebuilding to meet what we said we would do in the capital reconstruction without continuing to rely so heavily on overtime. And on the maintenance side, again, what you build, you have to maintain. And we have to improve our maintenance over what we've done in the past. In order to do that, some of it we can do with contractors. In fact, in this chart, there are 60 folks to be added to Ellis. Well, we have a plan, as you know, to hire a contractor. If we hire that contractor, we don't need those 60 people. And we've used contractors a lot. But when you're working in the core of the system, on the tracks, with the signals, you need the institutional capacity to be able to continue to maintain that system where it wasn't maintained as well as it should have been before. That adds up to close to 1,000 people. But it's reflected in the budget. That's what we need to get the job done that we, at least I propose we get done. Let's turn to revenues from the customer side. These are the principles that were adopted by the board in November of 2010 when it came to seeking additional revenue from the customer side. I'm not going to go through each principle. A couple of key ones here was, as we look forward, to look at simplification of the fare system, to obviously generate enough revenue, and to look at equitable fares and encourage the use of Smart Trip. So when we look at the objectives, as I based on those fare principles, they're listed here. We've talked about them before. Carol's talked about them. I'm not going to repeat every one. But it's simplifying fares, generating the revenue, encouraging the use of Smart Trip, being user-friendly, and trying to improve boarding times. So let's get to my fare recommendations. We learn from our customers, focus group interviews. We've certainly heard in the media, and by the way, I continue to hear it this week as I did more media, the off-the-camera comments from the announcers. Peak of the peak surcharge is very unpopular with our customers. It complicates the fare system for it. It's one of the major contributors to the fact that we have 45,000 different combinations of fares on this system. When you go to a vending machine, there's an extra column added just because you have peak fare systems. So to the previous complexity we had, we certainly added a lot more. Now, we did this for two reasons at the time, 2 years ago. One was provide more revenue. But the other was for policy reasons to try to encourage folks to leave the peak of the peak and move to the shoulders of the peak. That simply didn't happen when we looked at the results. Yes, we gained the revenue, but we did not make that movement. And we certainly complicated the fare system. So my proposal is to remove that peak of the peak surcharge to simplify the system, but also to increase peak period fares by around 5%. Now, that varies. And the reason it varies is because by taking peak of the peak surcharge out, for some customers, especially during the peak of the peak, when you put that in combination with a fare increase, you may be paying the same or less than you did before, maybe by a nickel, in terms of an individual trip. Overall, over the entire rush hour, peak period, roughly, I think the number is half of the folks traveling during the peak period will either see no increase or over the entire peak period, roughly 30% of the folks will see either no increase or a slight decrease in their fare. In the peak of the peak, roughly half, a little more than half, of the folks will see either no increase or a slight decrease. I also would propose increase in the maximum price of fare on Smart Trip to $5.75. What that means is today with the max fare, I think it's $5.40. You can, after 14 miles of travel on a single trip, you hit the max. This would increase it to 16 miles before you hit the max at $5.75. And frankly, as we look to the Silver Line service eventually extending out to Dulles Airport, we have to rethink the whole maximum fare issue. Otherwise, there's going to be a lot of subsidy by the counties out along that that part of the system. On off-peak fares, the off-peak fares has no rational, at the moment, rational connection to the peak fares. When I looked at the discount, I was looking for a uniform discount of the off-peak fares versus the peak fares, and it just doesn't exist today. In the first 3 miles of travel in the off-peak, you're paying around 80% of the peak fare. If you travel more than, say, 13 or 14 miles, you're paying about 55% of the peak fare. And in between, sometimes, depending on the mile, you're paying 56% of the peak fare, 73% of the peak fare, 60% of the peak fare, depending on the length. Just no connection because of the way it was set up. What I'm proposing simply is to gain more revenue, but also to begin to rationalize that system so that, okay, we'll remain at 80% for the first 3 miles, but let's get closer to, say, 75% for the next several miles on a uniform basis. And then rather than 55% cost of the fare for the maximum fare, raise it to 61%. Begin to move it to a more uniform system and raise some revenue at the same time. Let's see. Fare cards. Much discussion about the occasional rider on Metro Rail, such as a visitor, out-of-town person on business flying into Reagan or coming down through Union Station, or and you walk up against that fare array and try to figure out what to spend. What was originally discussed when Carol was going through with the board some discussions was its own flat fare system. In discussions with the JCC and suggestions from the JCC, they came up with a better idea, I think, in terms of a flat fare system. And it's more based on time period rather than zone. So that folks coming in on business, landing at Reagan, you get off, buy a fare card if they're in the peak period for $6. If they're in the off-peak period, spend $4. That's more than, in either case, the maximum fare for the peak or the off-peak. But it's simple. I will tell you, besides here in the from generally about the complexity of the system. I have heard from my own friends and colleagues who come down here to visit Washington occasionally. In fact, I had dinner with one about a month ago. She said, this is an inveterate public transportation rider from New York. She said, I took a cab over here. I'm not going to stand at that vending machine and figure out how much it's going to cost me to get here. This will at least simplify that sort of thing. And second, objective it also fits in with is to encourage as many people to move to Smart Trip as possible. Now, in order to do that, and this is what London has done, basically, is they try to push people to their Oyster card. So it has that second objective. But in order to do that, we have to have Smart Trip card issuing machines at all our stations. Right now, you go CVS, Giant. There's a couple of ticket windows we operate. That's not as convenient. So in order to do that, we have to have that in place. And staff tells me it probably takes us to September around Labor Day before we have that in place. We have to have that convenience for the customers, that those who do not want to pay for the fare card, $6 or $4, they can immediately buy a Smart Trip and use it and keep it in their wallet next time they're down. They can use it just like everybody else. By the way, that's what I did for my grandchildren, friends that came here. I bought 5 Smart Trip cards, so they wouldn't have to deal with that. But that's the sort of thing to do. Also, because it's ill-used, recommending eliminating the Short Trip Pass and the Day Pass. There's a very small fraction of customers that use that, and it's just one more complication. And in some respects, the single fare, paper fare cards helps with the visitors, if you will. On the bus side, rounding off, adjusting by the CPI, which is one of the fare principles from the board, that results in a dime increase in the base fare for buses. To help with boarding, and there's a number of issues with boarding, including with the smart trip card, people trying to load the single trips on it, which we have to address, but it's not a fare type proposal. For cash fares, rounding up to $2 for limited stop and $4 for express bus so it can be handled more quickly on the bus. On the parking side, last time we had did a fare increase, we did not increase parking rates. What we're proposing is a quarter a day increase in the parking rates. But also, when we look at the utilization of our parking garages, where we provide the reserve parking up to 15% of the spaces at $65 cost on top of the whatever parking charge to have that reserve spot. Some places we see great demand. Some places there's insufficient demand. I'd like the flexibility to be able to price those spaces and provide enough spaces to meet those demands and fill up those spaces every day. So the proposal basically is to give me the flexibility, give staff the flexibility, rather than maxing us out 15% to go up to 30% of reserve parking, but also, by the same token, not to charge $65 a space where we're not filling today's reserve parking, to be able to reduce that to $45 a space to make better utilization of the reserve parking, fill it up, and still gain additional revenue. the other part of that, I just want to remind everyone on reserve parking, when it gets to 10 a.m., then those parking spots open up to everyone. So the midday rider who still wants to park and come in can find some spaces, and they haven't all been filled up during the peak period. Coming out of the last fare increase, we had raised substantially the bike locker rental fee at our stations to $200. That was too much, as it turned out. The bike lockers are being underutilized. I'm proposing we reduce that to $120 as an annual fee. With regard to Metro Access, there's no change to the relationship proposed between regular fares and Metro Access fares, but they will be adjusted according to the fares we've talked about already. Same methodology, and I would also propose we increase the max fare by the CPI from $7 to, I think, to $7.40 it is. So what my proposal attempted to do is simplify the fare system to some extent. I cringe a little bit when I say, well, we've gone from 44,000 combinations to 15,000 combinations. It's still a lot, but when you have a time-based and distance-based fare system, you're going to have a number of combinations. But that still is simpler. Encourages the use of smart trip, user-friendly fares for out-of-town visitors in the sense that they can figure out what the fare is. If they want to use a paper fare card, I would encourage them to use a smart trip card like I've done for my friends. Relatives, and improve parking utilization and generate $66 million in revenue. Okay, next chart, and this is not precise apple to apples, so I don't want to sit here and say that, you know, $1.95 adult base fare on the Lamar is the same as the flat fare for using the entire transit system at New York City Transit, but it's just really just shows you that, you know, we're basically in the same game as other transit authorities are on the rail side and similarly on the bus side. Public hearing docket, next thing. When we, I've made my proposal. Obviously, these are just some suggestions to the board as they consider what the public hearing docket is. I'm sure you probably have other suggestions. But you could consider, rather than going to $5.75 for the peak period max fare, you go to $6. You could decide not to do away with the peak of the peak fare. You, on the off-peak fares, you could try to align it even better than I've suggested with regard to the peak period fare. And you could also increase the off-peak max fare to $4. Those are some suggestions with regard to the public hearing document. If you adopted my proposal just as is, which I would be thoroughly surprised at, this would be the subsidy by jurisdiction based on the formulas we have in place today. It's, you know, still will be continued to be refined. It certainly will be reflected, changed as a result of after going through the public hearings and whatever board decisions are made. This will be changed, obviously. With regard to moving to a calendar to get this out for public hearings, this is the basic schedule, discussion today, by, at the end of the month board meeting, the board to you know, adopt a resolution to go to public hearing, which we think we can get to by late February, early March, going through all the logistics of that, time to talk about it and discuss it, March through May. In that time period, give you a staff report on the public hearings, and then hopefully by June, we've got to get there, adopt a budget, and whatever changes you want to make to the fares. That's the operating side. Let me turn to the capital side, which is part and parcel of this. This is FY11, FY12, just look at the past. I've mentioned this already in terms of our acceleration of the capital program. As at the same time, we're trying to get the organization in place to do it as efficiently as possible. Some of the highlights of what we've done over the last couple of years, new buses, to replace existing buses, rehabilitating buses, new metro access vehicles to replace existing, 21 miles of new running rail track, roughly. Lots of things that go with that and beyond that. Work on the signal system. Rehabilitate or replace the 45 escalators, 5 elevators. Okay. When we look at the proposed capital program for 2013, we see an increase, not at the rate of investment that we have over the past 2 years. We're beginning to come out of that steep climb and starting to level off. But we're talking about close to $1 billion in investment. Most of it comes out of the capital improvement program, which is pretty much split evenly between state, local funds from the jurisdictions and federal formula, and importantly, PREA funds from the federal government, along with a couple other smaller programs. This capital program is devoted almost exclusively to safety, reliability, state of good repair, a small amount in there for enhancements basically around some priority bus service and that sort of thing. Just reiteration of that gives you a list of some of the items that are in the capital program. By the way, in case you're asking what's the Silver Line preparation, that's more for the training and stuff like that running up to it. It's reimbursable, that kind of stuff. The Portland NTSB recommendations are in there and will continue to be in there. And I might add that as we proceed through looking at the automatic train control system and improving that, putting the track circuit modules in, all that, which is part of this program, part of that is a system safety analysis. We have been embarked on that, and we can talk about that another time. But as we proceed through that, we have not yet come to the conclusion as to whether there are other enhancements beyond what we've seen thus far that are required. Also, while with the NTSB, we have made a major step forward in reviewing with them our monitoring system that has been put in place here for their review. Coming out of that review, maybe other things that have to be done. So I can't sit here and say we know everything, but this certainly represents what we know at this time. And as we look further out into the future, It's more of the same. State of good repair, same level investment where it will be in the $900 million to $1 billion a year. This is reflected in our capital funding agreement with the jurisdictions. We're trying to live up to that commitment. It's taken us a couple years to get up to that level. Other than what I mentioned before, the other only other thing that gets in here in terms of enhancements is the new fare control system that we're embarked on and in the proposal stage at this point. But it's more of the same to rebuild this place. This is what gets some of the stuff that gets accomplished in the next 5 years. Replacing the cars. They're, you know, they're in prototype stage. We'll be reviewing the prototype pretty soon. Replaces the 1000 series car. It's one of the major NTSB recommendations. That's a $750 million recommendation that we have to do. The automatic train control improvements. Today we're replacing the track circuit modules on the red line. We're going to move on to the orange line next, I think, right? And blue line. That has to continue, and that will go on for a few years. We'll continue to rehabilitate the tracks. 2 years ago, when I got here, I was amazed at the condition of the tracks. We had a couple hundred slow orders in place to deal with that so we could operate safely. We've now pretty much wiped that out. Yeah. Now we've got to keep it that way. Part of this five-year program, six-year program, is to replace the 4,000 series rail cars. They're troublesome. We think it's more economically effective to replace them rather than to do a major overhaul. We've got to work on our bus garages. We've got a 100-year-old bus garage in Northern. We've got other bus garages that are old, some located perhaps not where people want them to be located. We've got to continue to provide that. You cannot effectively and efficiently maintain buses in 100-year-old garages that were built for trolley cars. Rebuilding rail yards, continuing to periodically, every year, replace buses and rehabilitate buses in a systematic manner. One major change from last year's six-year capital program to this year's six-year capital program is our approach to escalators. As we've now been into it for a year or two of rehabilitating escalators on a more aggressive basis, we've come to the conclusion, our technical staff has come to the conclusion, we're better off replacing more and rehabilitating fewer. So rather than, I think 8 or 10 escalators that were going to be replaced, we're proposing replacing 98 escalators. A lot of these escalators, as you know, are built by different manufacturers, gone out of business. They're unique escalators. As we are going to embark next month at DuPont, which is a very unique escalator, we've come to the conclusion, staff has come to the conclusion that we're better off replacing more and rehabilitating fewer. And then we have to buy cars for, and this is reimbursable, for the Silver Line in two phases. Phase one, we're underway now with. We have an option for the second phase as that engineering moves forward. And as I mentioned, a new electronic payment program. And we'll be reporting more in depth as we do quarterly capital progress reports, but this gives you an idea. On the left-hand side, the total units in the system, miles, running rail, escalators, elevators, what we delivered in FY11, what we're delivering in FY12, and what we plan to deliver over the six-year capital program so that you can get an idea of how much will be accomplished over those years out of the total that's there. And, of course, as I mentioned, replacing cars. There are risks. I hope not on the jurisdictional side, but on the federal side, to the funding that we receive for the capital program. We have been quite successful with your support, with the congressional delegation support, to continue to receive the $150 million in appropriation under the PREA fund. But given what we read in the newspapers, and as we all sit here in the nation's capital, we know that continues to be at risk, and we have to continue to be very attentive to that, and hopefully with the continued great work by our congressional delegation, we will continue to retain that, but that is at risk in the current budget climate. Similarly, with sequestration, I think I got that word right, the formula funds could be at risk as the budget is addressed in the forthcoming year. That's another risk. As I said before, we'll focus on safety projects first, and then state of good repair, and improvements last, if you will. But if we don't get that money, if we can't make the investments at the rate we're proposing, as well as maintaining, what we could do is slip back in that hole. Instead of climbing out of it and going for the top again, we can slip back if we don't get that kind of funding. Well, there's a lot of things in the capital program. There are a lot of things that are not in the capital program. What is not in the capital program is preparing for the future in terms of expansion of capacity. We have a goal of 50% eight-car trains. We're not at that goal. I mentioned earlier that we want to increase the resources devoted to car maintenance so we get at that goal and also help us be at the startup of the Silver Line work. But we are not, have no money in the capital budget to go to 75% or 100% eight-car trains, and that's not only buying the trains, the cars for it, but it's also the expansion and the increase in capacity, if you will, to the traction power system. We do pick up some of it as we do rebuilding, but not all of it. We've included, you know, in the capital program, rehabilitation of major segments, red line, good portion of it, blue-orange line, but there are other segments yet to come, and we will have to continue to program for those in the future. There's no real rail station capacity enhancements in this program. And there's nothing for bus fleet expansion. Nothing. Again, we have to go to public hearing on that. Hopefully we can do that at the same time we're doing the other public hearing and lead up through the same conclusion. That concludes my proposal.
Thank you. Thank you.
Carol gets to answer the question.
Thank you very much. And you notice no interruptions.
I appreciate it.
Okay, we do appreciate the patience of the board and being able to go through the entire presentation. And I'm going to start by, I think we probably can say everybody wants to have a comment here. And so I'm going to try and just go from the left and the right of this table and see if we can get through the comments in that manner. And let me start by introducing Mr. Jim Dyke, who's at the table today. Mr. Dyke, welcome. Mr. Dyke has been appointed as the Commonwealth representative from the Virginia. And if I recall, I think he signed his papers yesterday, so he's officially at the table.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to serve and the fact that the first issue I have to step up to is the fair increase. That's a nice, soft welcome.
Good. Gives you a good opportunity to go back to the Commonwealth and just tell them what the challenge is. Okay, thank you very much. Yes. Mr. Barnes, is there a question? No, Mr. Barnes.
A couple of comments. I appreciate very much the straightforward presentation from the CEO as to what is needed. I agree in terms of those needs. I think especially on the safety side, both operating and capital, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. In fact, in 2 weeks when we meet at Safety Committee, we'll be talking about both the fatigue issue and some of the NTSB recommendations. So I'm very solidly supportive of that. Obviously, it does have to be paid for. On the fare side, I honestly have to say I'm not really thrilled with the $6 flat fare. I recognize that the original proposal for the zoned flat fare had some issues with it. But to back off of that and say every occasional user should pay the highest fare in the system is probably not a great idea. Maybe it's more appropriate to retain the paper cards until we have the new fare collection system, at which point you get the simplicity of if you have a credit card, you tap it and go. You don't need to know what the fare is. But I think we should take a very close look at that. I am very concerned that riders within the district who are visitors are going to flow to taxi cabs and a circulator bus in enormous numbers. I'm not sure about what we wouldn't wind up with revenue losses at this level. So I really want to hear more about that as we go forward and get reaction to it. But on the whole, we've got a solid budget here. It's what we have to make this a workable system, and I appreciate your having brought it to us.
Thank you. Ms. Nickel.
Thank you. Left to right. Oh, left to right, left to right.
That's right. Otherwise, we could make...
Okay, I appreciate being on the right this morning. Okay. Thank you. And let me echo Mr. Downey's comments. I do appreciate the straightforward presentation and highlighting the key issues. Obviously, there are a lot of issues that will have to be delved into. I certainly want to reserve judgment on any specific aspect of the budget for the moment until I have a chance to delve into it and the board has a chance to discuss it and to hear from the community. Certainly, we know that the system got where it was because of insufficient investment in the system, insufficient maintenance, and frankly, insufficient oversight. And the budget is the most important thing that we do, quite frankly, because it enables everything else that we do. So we will take a sober look at it. Fare increases, subsidy increase is painful. We know that there will have to be increases in revenue, and we know that we can't strip the system, otherwise we will short-trip safety and everything else. So we'll take a hard look at it, and where we do make the choices around subsidy increase and fare increases, it will be sobering but necessary, and we need to look at how those fares are arrayed, I think, carefully, whether it's a single fare card or whether it's increases or decreases. We need to make sure that the impact is felt and distributed appropriately among all fare classes. And so that'll be a key concern for me, and particularly making sure that we meet safety needs throughout. So thank you for the forthright process, and I look forward to the discussion and with the feedback from the community as well as discussing it with my colleagues. Thank you.
Madam Chair, when you called on me before, I was just making introductory remarks I guess I do have some observations on the budget, if it's appropriate for me to add them at this point. Gone through similar situations in the past, we had to create budgets, even though not on the Metro Board. I'm familiar with the fact that you have to step up and make a lot of tough decisions and take on some unpopular issues. My initial reaction as a new member is that I think one of the things we can do is to try to explain to the public why it is we need to have these fare increases and to tie it into safety and increased service, things of that nature. And to the extent those of us who associate with Metro can do, step up even more and show the customers how much we respect the fact that they're using the system and that we understand their concerns, and we do all that we can to let them know that we want to continue to have them ride our transit system. And so little things we can do as far as courtesy and things of that nature, I think, would be very appropriate. I think it's also important to look at the fact that if we're going to be going back to our jurisdictions asking for more money, that we need to have a firm, well-documented record that we've looked at how we're spending money now and look at where there are additional cost savings and where we can make some other savings. And just looking at the material that I was provided, I think we would be remiss if we didn't address the issues related to pension costs, especially as we look at what some of the other jurisdictions are doing and how they address that, whether or not we need to address the issue of how overtime is calculated into our pension system. I think that's something we need to step up to. It's not a popular issue. We have obviously great respect for our workers. We want them to have a solid pension system. But we also need to take a hard look at how that money is being spent. And as we move into the labor negotiations, I think we need to be very mindful of that issue, as well as looking at things, and I had the benefit of starting my orientation yesterday, so I'm learning a little bit more. But the whole idea of, and I'm hopeful we'll get more explanation of this, of the need to start as a bus driver before you can then move on to be a rail operator or a station manager, things of those nature. And I think that all those issues need to be really looked at to see if that's the best way to get resources and employees. Are we matching up job skills with what's required for the particular position? And I think we as a board need to be very, very vigorous and aggressive in working with the with management to see that we address these issues quickly. We may obviously not prevail on them. I know there's some history there, but I think we would not be serving our constituents and our citizens if we didn't raise these issues and be aggressive, and I certainly plan to do that, especially if I'm going to be going back asking our jurisdictions, both local and state, to put more money on the table to address these things. So that's just sort of my opening thoughts on this, and I look forward to hearing from the public, and I appreciate the fact that the general manager had to make some tough decisions, and look forward to working with him as this unfolds.
Thank you. Mr. Barnes.
I certainly agree with the comments that my colleagues have made, and like others have indicated, I'm going to reserve judgment on the specifics until we have a chance to dig into it and hold the hearings and hear from everyone. But I do want to say that an awful lot of very good work has gone into this, I think, and a lot of good thinking, and I salute everybody that's been involved, Carol and Dave and Bill and all your team. These are very tough issues, but we've got a big responsibility here to make sure this system is, as you suggest, at the top of the heap. That's where we want it to be. It's crowded today, and it's only, my train was very crowded this morning. I didn't get a seat. So it's only going to get more challenging in the years ahead. And that raises a question. I know, Mr. Charles, you are meeting tomorrow with the governors and the mayor. And one issue that comes up regularly in conversations that I have with people about Metro is whether, as a region, we ought to be looking at some kind of dedicated regional funding source for this system so that we're not in this position every year of wondering how much money we can get from jurisdictions. And is that something that that we ought to begin to think about as a region?
I think, to answer your question, absolutely we should think about it. But I also say there's two sides to that coin. The other side is once you have those dedicated revenues, you're held to them, and when they take a downturn, you're held to that, and you don't have the resources you're expected to live with that. So that's, I prefer, frankly, in my experience, both New Jersey and frankly here, that where you have bipartisan, strong political support for a public transportation system, that the appropriators find, through discussion and understanding, find a way to provide that funding year after year. Here you have 6 years of the capital funding agreement, and hopefully someday when there's a transportation authorization bill, a pretty good idea of the flow of money here and how to plan on it. On the operating side, we don't have that, but you have a good record of the jurisdictions, you know, at least in the last few years, of providing that support. So, yes, the discussion should be had, but there is, you know, pluses and minuses to it.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'd like to be associated with my colleague's previous comments. I just want to expound a bit upon the neophyte's initial observation around HR. In 28 years of managing, I've always been known as an advocate for employees. And so my comments may be taken as inconsistent with that, but I think it's important that we put these issues on the table, particularly for someone who is a champion of employees and partnering in terms of leadership of the agency. It was very helpful to see the exhibit on pensions, but I believe, based upon what I've seen to date, that we need to take a look at the full array of benefits. I think every organization has had to face this issue. It is a sort of a redefinition of the relationship between
employees and employers, and it's not about them and us. It's about partnering together to achieve the objectives and the mission. So obviously, you know, a strong trust relationship has to be in place, and I've been very impressed with your leadership, Rich, and that of your team and employee relations and so forth. But I think we've got to do more of that because we've got to do more things together that are really going to be tough, that if not handled properly, employees may perceive as a negative moving toward employees when, in fact, we're really talking about a partnering, investing in them in a full range of transforming, you know, our HR function. So I think we're going down the road, and I expect that we'll have to do more of that. The other comment, one thing I tend to be consistent, good and bad. The other thing I want to come in is very pleased with seeing the proposed increase in support for our police force, Chief. I am interested, however, and will be looking for other kinds of resources that may be made available to advance and enhance the work of increasing our work. We can never have enough officers on the street, on the system, around the community to address all the issues. And so there are some other creative things that I've certainly seen our leadership in Prince George's and Metro explore in terms of how we continue to make progress in that regard. Very good work, very excited about what's coming forward, and I also associate myself with the specific comments my colleague from Prince George's made regarding revenue. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Yule.
Echo the comments that have already been expressed, but to also to sort of piggyback on the last comments relative to support for employees, that's certainly something I think we all care about and concerned with, but yet we need to also seriously reflect on those drivers that impacts this budget, as it does with municipal budget, local municipal budgets, and that's, you know, really the pension costs and health benefits, and that's something that I think we, you know, we're not talking about taking something away from folks, but what we're talking about is balance and fairness, and so I think I would encourage that we seriously consider those things. Also, with the proposed fare increases, you know, while I've been both a supporter and a critic of Metro Access, I'm concerned about, you know, the rate of increase, the dramatic rate of increase that's being proposed here and what impacts that may have. Also wanted to, unless someone's already mentioned it, our colleague Mary Hines is ill and not able to be here today, but did you reflect on her concern? Okay, I'll pass it on to you then, Mayor Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Acosta.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I echo a lot of the comments that were said today. And also, I think this budget is a pretty honest assessment of what this agency can do and can't do, given the resources that may be available. But I do want to go back to the fare proposal, because I think this is what is going to touch our customers the most. And I agree with Mr. Dowdy that the flat fare proposal may cause some issues with some of our customers. So what I may suggest is purpose of the docket is maybe put the two-zone proposal back on the table and kind of let that air out publicly and also give us an opportunity to look at what the positives and negatives are of each proposal. So I would suggest that we do that in terms of the docket. Also, with the removal of the peak surcharge, I think you raise a lot of interesting statistics about who may or may not be affected given your, you know, your ridership. Is there going to be a way for a customer to determine, based on your proposal, what the change of fare is going to be based on their trip today? If you remove the peak of the peak fare and then they enter their times, will they be able to calculate their impact?
We'll probably give, as part of a public hearing or a public input, a few examples so that people can actually see the impact.
Because I think the way, I mean, it's a, you know, there are changes in the impact based on your trip. So, and I think that message needs to get out because this is not a blanket increase around the peak of the peak. And I think that's a very important message we need to send to our customers. Also, with respect to the short trip pass, the day pass, you mentioned that there is very little use of that. Do you have statistics on that? Okay. I think there's been a lot of discussion out there in terms of, you know, the desirability of a pass, more structured pass system for this agency. I know that other transit properties throughout the country have very successful pass programs. So my question has always been, why hasn't this been successful here? And is it because we haven't really made an effort to develop a program that that rewards off-peak use, for instance, if you ride the system a lot? And I know we've had, you know, you proposed something early on in October, but that was kind of, that's not reflected here. So I'd just like to get a little more information why that was taken off the table, and whether we need to consider something, you know, especially for those customers who may have families, for instance, that want to travel on a day, and that the $6 flat fee is pretty expensive per person. So we might, you know, so depending on the mark, we may want to look at certain types of passes.
Well, I have a lot of questions about the budget. I'm going to stick to the issues that need to be addressed about authorizing the hearing docket. I want to identify myself with the concerns that Ms. Hines raised in her email, and I'll let the chair deal with that later. I would, in trying to deal with this issue of visitors, tourists, they are 15%. According to our statistics of rail ridership in the system, actually 14%, according to the pie chart that is in this material. I have no idea what price elasticity looks like for that group. I have no idea how this fits in the current competitive environment about tourist mobility. The Park Service terminated the Tourmobile contract, has not replaced it. There is a significant reshuffling going on about how visitors access Washington and its attractions. I don't see a percent increase calculation for what this means about an average tourist coming here. What are they going to actually experience in terms of increase in cost? $6 per trip for a family of four is $24. And if you do that a couple of days, you're into near $100. That's going to have some effect on elasticity, obviously. I would appreciate a focus group with station managers who are in stations that have a high degree of tourists, particularly in the peak seasons, about their reactions about this, so that there is better data about what the people on the front lines are experiencing with tourists. And the other is a clarification about the smart trip card chips and the ability to have a relatively unconstrained supply of smart trip cards, which gives us more options. I'm reluctant to put just the visitor pass issue on the docket for hearings if it is limiting of other outcomes other than what we are talking about here. And I would hope that we would have room for flexibility here in a way that I don't see in the establishment of the hearing docket. I'll let the chair deal with that about Ms. Hines' piece. On the issue of pension, I have to say that this board created a big part of this mess about pensions by going 8 years without making a contribution to the pension fund. In the years when the pension fund was growing at 15 to 25% a year because of market gains, the board opted out of making any contribution to the retirement fund. This board needs to recognize that and make a commitment that no matter what the market returns are, there is a minimum contribution that this authority will make to the retirement fund. Those gains were all paper. They all went away. The cash going into the system should have been there
from those 7 or 8 years. They weren't. So management has a responsibility here to recognize that and make some kind of strongest possible pledge that that will not happen again in the future about the integrity of the retirement system. The last thing that I'll talk about the proposed budget is that it envisions the expansion of the workforce by 1,027 people. It would be the largest single expansion, I think, in manpower in the history of the authority. I don't know what the current vacancies, what is the a rough number, the current number of vacancies in the system. Positions vacant in the... That's how many people? That's 1,000 people. Okay. The normal attrition here at the authority is 5%, 6%. That's how many people? That's about five. Let's make it for round numbers, 500 people. So we're talking about a target of close to 2,000 hires in the 13 budget if we were fully staffed for all vacancies. I actually do not believe that this authority has the HR capacity to execute that. And absent a realistic expansion of the HR capacities in terms of both manpower and contract authority, I don't believe there is a snowball's chance in hell of closing the current vacancy gap, increasing the authorized hired number, and filling normal attrition vacancies. I echo Artis's concern about HR and its capacities and the ability to actually manage an aggressive hiring target of that size.
Thank you. Mr. Downs has raised a question, but I think in raising the question, I think it begs a discussion in our meetings going forward in terms of the numbers that are in this budget, because there are the issues that I understand your concern, but there are the issues of how do we move forward in not only the maintaining of the system and its current status, but how we are going to be required to expand the workforce for the growth. So I think it begs a presentation in the next one of the sooner and later presentations. Mr. Giancola.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and also thanks to Mr. Sarles and his staff for their report and their proposal. I'm glad Mr. Downs brought up the issue of personnel as well as Ms. Hampshire Cowan. If we go to page 12, as we move forward, I think we need to kind of understand a little more detail on some of the increases in staff, a quarter of which will be for the capital program and three quarters in the operating side. And when I ask for more detail, I think as we go forward, you know, we talk about system investments, 169 folks, new facilities, 33. Certainly we're talking about new security and safety personnel, but looking at the Metro Police itself, I'm assuming they're all in the operations area, and whether they're in the safety and state of good repair or split among all the four areas in operating, that would be nice to know. I'm sure that there's increased security folks needed just for the Silver Line, so it's not like they're all in the safety and state of good repair line. So I think in asking for more detail in this area, I think, you know, I would like to be convinced of and I'm sure the public would, of exactly you know, what we're going to get for these additional people. And in fact, what would be the increment, increase or improvement or, in fact, sustainability of what we're doing totally in our system. So a little more information and also what impact it will give to the system when we get those positions versus what adverse impact would be if we didn't. Related to the capital program, and also operating to some degree as well, my past experience in the federal government with the A76 program dealt with a concept called the most efficient organization, which looked long-term about what the size of the organization should be in various areas, and then building toward that. In some cases, we have a very ambitious capital program, double what it was in previous years, and obviously, I don't think we're going to see a doubled program forever. So in some degree, I think we need to kind of consider, when you look at those 255 positions, are they permanent forever, or are they maybe just for the next 3 to 4 years or 5 years? And ultimately, what will be our most efficient organization? I bring this up only in the sense that, and you mentioned it, Mr. Sarles, the issue of contractors, you know, and contract, whether it's maintenance or project oversight. And I can see a need for some open-end type contracts where we would, particularly in the capital program, we would hire firms in an open-ended nature for short-term type oversight and assistance to handle some of these needs. So some balance there. I'm sure you probably already considered this and you're probably already doing that, but it would be nice to hear it from you in a little more detail on that. So the bottom line here is that as we go forward, I'd like to see more information in that area and also the impacts of whether we get it or not and what those impacts or adverse impacts would be. That's all I wanted to offer at this point.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to echo what everyone has said in thanking the staff for presenting a proposal to us today. I have several kind of general observations, and I would probably round up with a few questions for you, Madam Chair, that may be considered points of order. The first thing that I'll mention, and I notice, and I thank you, and I just want to kind of recognize that interesting euphemism here when we talk about rounding of bus fares up, which is a bus fare increase. So I just want to note that in saying that, we also don't acknowledge that the local bus fare increase would be different than the express bus increase. And I think it's important when we're talking about increasing bus fares that we use the same language that we use when we talk about the rail and we talk about parking, because in many cases the patrons of the bus are transit-dependent people. They don't have other choices, and it's important to acknowledge straightforwardly the impact on them. I also must confess to not quite understanding the kind of turning over of $12 million in revenue for the peak of the peak. And I recognize your comments today that some fares will go up, some fares will go down, but your presentation indicates that the authority would be willing to just turn over the $12 million, which I have difficulty balancing that presentation with the one that says by rounding up bus fares, we increase by $1 million. So my question would be, is that a trade-off that makes sense? I echo my colleague's comments about making sure this paper fare card issue is fully vetted and that perhaps other proposals as it relates to how we deal with the off-peak are dealt with. And I think that the issues around the passes are similar. Clearly, we're crowded during the peak periods and we have capacity in the off-peak periods. And I think whatever policy that we recommend should recognize that we need to get more people riding in the peaks. And we know that if someone has an unlimited all-day pass, they have a greater incentive to do that. My next questions, Madam Chair, relate to this being the first budget that I'm involved with in Metro. And I know that the board in previous in previous budget seasons has given the staff some direction in terms of goals that we want to achieve. And we've heard some of them already, parity between bus and rail. And also, what I think has been missing from this conversation, which gives me some unreadiness, frankly, about moving forward today, is what are the real savings that the authority has identified? In suggesting that we have to raise fares and suggesting that we're going to hire 1,000 additional employees, have we also presented, I haven't seen it, an analysis of the savings that the authority investigated? If, for example, we actually need 1,000 new employees, have we looked at the 11,000 employees that we already have, their functions, and if they are achieving mission-critical objectives? Is there going to be scrubbing of any within the 11,000 employees that we have? The last point I'll raise, Madam Chair, is this one. If, for example, the fare proposals that are before us are insufficient, are there other alternatives? We know that there were a number of alternatives considered in the JCC, considered by the authority, and we have a few before us. But would it make more sense to go to the public with a fuller toolbox or possibilities? And that would be my concern. We are suggesting, as my colleague mentioned, a not insignificant increase to the number of people that work here, and an equally significant increase in what you're asking the jurisdictions to support in that. So my question to you, Madam Chair, is if you're a member like me who doesn't think what we're presenting to the public is a full array of options, how do we affect that now? Before we approve a docket to go to the people?
The docket, the question you're asking is whether there is any latitude in the budget that's been presented by the general manager for us to go to public hearing with that latitude to address some of your questions, for example. And I think that is exactly where we're moving. We're moving forward to say we're going to public hearing. What we will ask and will be developed through staff is how might those options be proposed? Such that we have on the table the $4 to $6 pass, and if that is not where, if we are to go beyond that, then we need to indicate what that would be, and those would be the steps that we would move forward, and what parts of that would we like to change. For example, I've heard, and I would start this conversation the question of peak to peak. Removal of peak-to-peak is a removal of $12 million. It does describe, by removing it and putting in the other fares, a different way of reducing the fares to in the general public. The question is that adequate enough for us? That is, keeping the pass or expanding another tool such as the pass or removing peak-to-peak off of the table. So we would be building.
May I put a question to you, Madam Chair? Mm-hmm. For example, I don't get that trade-off, taking $12 million off the table and then adding $1 million by raising bus fares. So my suggestion would be to take the bus fare increase off the table and take that to the public. How do we affect that today?
I guess there would be a question that the board would decide. Are we saying no bus fare, maintain the bus fare as it stands, or advertise a bus fare? Those are the options there. If that's what we want to do, or does it answer the question that you've just asked? That is, we've taken peak of the peak off, and we have raised the bus fare by rolling up. And I think what we're trying to do is build what the docket needs to look like in order for the board to have a full discussion with the public. So I think what we need to do after this discussion is to go through the steps of what is it that we really are going to put in that docket for the board. Okay. Does that answer your question where you need to be at this point, Mrs. Carlson?
With this additional question, will we have an opportunity today to ask the staff to go through, using some examples, what the impact of the peak of the peak change would be? I'm still having trouble understanding removal of the peak of the peak as it relates to the other rail increases and how that balances out.
I think that is a question that I think I have to ask, and I think it was one that we had thought about in terms of just as we looked at the capital and we described what the capital buys us and what the users should see. I think what we were looking at is what is the impact of the fare increase as the proposal says versus what a rider today is paying. And that is, if I go to the machine today and I get on at all of the varying hours, can the user see today? Because the discussion we want to have with the public is this an acceptable proposal, and how does it impact my pocketbook and my service delivery? To me, those are the ones that.
And I would just, I think the suggestion was made earlier to give a number of examples. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one, but we can say, you know, develop more and put them out there. One of the most heavily used routes in the peak of the peak is between Union Station and Farragut North. The folks that ride that in the peak of the peak, under my proposal, would actually see a nickel decrease in their fare. But there are lots of other examples like that, and we can develop a full array so people have a fair idea what's involved.
And I think what Ms. Bowser has noted, and I think I heard across the table, is that if one, we would maybe we don't want to go in that direction, and the question to be asked is, do we want to leave the general manager's proposal as part of the public discussion and expand that proposal so that there is another choice that the board will make when we are brought back from the public hearings? And that's where it is. Let me go to Mr. Nichols and then back to Mr.
Just had a question, a clarification of the preceding discussion, if that's okay. Just in terms of process and order, and I think all of the questions and comments extremely valuable today, certainly not fully exhaustive of questions that people may have. In terms of next steps and expectations, we, correct me if I'm wrong, we're not establishing what will be on the docket today. We're gathering data, we're hearing, but this is not the point at which we will authorize a docket. These are opening dialogues that will come down the roads. Is that correct, or am I wrong?
It will be approved at the board meeting, but I think we need to put as much on the table today so that we will have the structure of that resolution to include everything that we want.
I do understand that, but to the extent that examination of the information following today raises in my mind or anyone else's mind an issue, an opportunity, a question that I may want to bring forward for consideration to be on the docket, that discussion is not foreclosed after today, and that's the point I'm trying to make.
That's correct.
Okay,
you can always amend what
right.
The presentation at the board.
Ms. Bowser's concerns and others. The fact that a point may not be raised today does not foreclose the opportunity to include that point of discussion at the board meeting to be included on the docket. Okay.
That's correct. But, Madam Chair, to be clear, we're in committee. And so what the action item is to include the fare changes as presented. And so a vote to do that would indicate an initial agreement in my mind for my vote in what's presented.
Madam Chair,
can I come back and let Mr. Bossier please have his say?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thanks, Rich, for the presentation. Many years ago, as Sheila Pine knows, I worked at the Office of Management and Budget, so I put my budget hat on. I also put my businessman's hat on. As Muriel pointed out earlier, we did not do a budget resolution like was done for the current budget, and that was Budget Resolution 2010-68, which I'm looking at. It's included in our budget document that we all got. So I have a couple questions. One, there was a $25 million cost savings that was in that budget resolution. Did that actually happen, and can we get actual data in dollars and cents that $25 million in cost savings occurred? Second, I noticed that there was a $5 million shift in your original December presentation. What's that about? Third, there was a notation that we saved $200 million over the last 3 to 4 years in the presentation. Rich, I forget what page. What's that about, and is it the kind of savings that we won't see again, or is it just a one-time situation? I share my concern with a fellow board member, Mr. Downs, about the increase in the number of employees, so I would urge that we try to, and I share Ms. Dyke's concern about the pension, that we use the word minimize labor cost increases to the extent that we can, and that's sort of broad statement, but we got an escalating personnel that's not sustainable. I don't see how it's sustainable or even we can even hire them in time. Finally, I ask that the docket, which I didn't, to sell this to the public, include what kind of cost savings has been done, what cost savings will be discussed in the docket. And finally, I'd like to know, including in that, is what non-core business activities that we are engaged in this budget can be privatized, similar to what Christian's doing in the paratransit metro access area, or at least considering what, including partnering, for example, may we get Capital Bike Share to do this bike program. You know, they seem to be very successful. Maybe we look at privatizing the garages. You said many times it's not our primary focus. Maybe there's a way to save money and look at how that might work. Similarly, the Smart Benefit Program could also be looked at as a potential opportunity. And there might be some others that I have not been able to identify in my budget examination of the current budget. And since this is my first budget, I'm sure I'm missing a whole bunch, but I have gone through the budget, and those were the three or four items that I think we need to be able to explain to the public that we looked at, we discarded, or we're going to pursue in this upcoming budget. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. And Mr. Downey.
Yeah, a couple of quick process issues. Mm-hmm. We have several months before the budget is adopted. At what point will we see a detailed presentation of the budget? In the past, we've gotten a budget book.
We have budget books that we are prepared to hand out today.
Okay, good.
And so you'll have the detail by department, slice and dice, in a variety of different ways.
Thank you. And on the fares, when we act in 2 weeks, we will be adopting the docket.
Yes.
I think we should have discussion of what goes on it and what doesn't. I would suggest that those, and might include me, who want to propose changes, provide them in sufficient time that the staff can price them out and not be shooting from the hip. We got ourselves in trouble 2 years ago on some of our fare changes.
And I appreciate that, and I think where we are today is that we have the base budget, and we have any comments that we have today that we would like to add as additions to that. And I agree that we need to have those so that we are not asking staff to simply react to a proposal that has not been vetted. And the comments that have been made would be added to reflect in the motion the areas that we all agree. And I think we can either do this by consensus now regarding those which we want to first provide to the staff regarding the base budget, and that's I think the beginning process that we're in, and that's not inconsistent. And then the next steps are the discussions and with the public as well with the board in vetting all of those to determine how we come back then with a actual budget for adoption. I want to go back to a couple of pieces that we've heard around the table now in terms of putting information into the resolution to necessitate the kind of interest and concern that's being raised by board members. And so either by consensus or by vote, what I've heard is that there is the board is questioning the fact of eliminating peak-to-peak entirely and, one, losing the $12 million of revenue and make some consideration of how we go out to public to discuss whether or not we eliminate the peak-to-peak or we accept the peak-to-peak proposal that's been made. Is that where we are with that question? And it, let me go by them one by one, because I think the peak-to-peak is actually an action. It's changing the fair process. Is that correct? Okay. The next part was the bus increase that was placed on, and Ms. Bowser responded that the increase would be the natural, by rounding it up gives a natural increase to the bus.
Yeah, I just want to clarify that just so we're clear. The 85% of our bus customers use SmartTrip. That only goes up by a dime. So what I understand we're referring to is strictly the cash fare. Okay.
Yeah. Is that? Yes.
You're talking about amending the resolution?
Yes.
Okay. What I would be interested to see is an analysis of eliminating the bus fare increases in light of the proposal to give back $12 million in the peak of the peak.
Well, I think we can
let me state that differently.
Analysis, the question, and in the end, let's use the example of the peak to peak. If we go out and have a discussion with whether or not we can come back as a board to decide whether or not we will have peak to peak, then we will have the $12 million coming back into the budget. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And so the question that you're asking about the bus reduction, I think, is a separate piece. That is, as a separate act in terms of generating the revenue and asking the customer to pay. Okay. And so
a better way to state it, Madam Chair, might, from my point of view, might be to identify $1 million to eliminate the need for a bus fare increase.
We're talking specifically about the cash fare.
Yes.
Okay.
Only the cash. And I think when we say identify $1 million, that is just a directive then that will go to the general manager for this resolution to do that. And I think if I'm and I'm looking around the board here, that will be an item to determine whether or not the board believes that we should eliminate bus increases versus not eliminating bus increases, no, bus fare increases. Mm-hmm. Is that mm-hmm. consensus yet? Any yeah. objection to that?
I am a little confused here.
Okay.
By what I heard, the $1 million, as I understand it, is the implication of rounding. What's
that's
the
right.
amount by which base bus fares are rising? The 10 cent?
10 cents, that's it.
No, but how much does that generate in revenue?
Oh, 6 million.
$6 million. So it's a significant amount.
Yeah. And I asked Ms. Bowser her question because I'm hearing a different thing that Ms. Bowser is saying. She's saying no bus by rounding or otherwise. Yes. Are we going to allow a bus increase?
What do you mean by rounding when you say it's a matter of rounding? That's a bus increase.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
What it is that there's 85% of our folks use SmartTrip on buses. And what we're proposing is that fare increase be a dime, from $1.60 to $1.70. $1.50, $1.60, I'm sorry.
And what is
the remaining piece is that there are some people, 15% or so of the people, get on the bus with cash. And what we were suggesting was rather than the dime increase, if you will, which involves a lot of change, is to round that up to $2 or to, in one case, as it was, on the local, and on the other case was on the express to $4 from $3.85. So I'm just trying to clarify. Are we talking about the cash fare increase, which is the one that I think generated $1 million, as opposed to the smart trip increase of a dime, which generates $6 million? I just need clarity, that's all.
I heard the rounding. I did not hear the bus increase, and that's the question.
I think we should, I would be comfortable exploring both options between now and when we take it to the public.
Well, let me do it this way. Let me ask that there be a motion placed so that we can decide how to address this, because there is a consensus piece that we're looking at, and we need to have clarity as to what the board is saying. I think, are we at this point saying that the bus fare increase that's been proposed by the general manager should be removed as this budget is being presented in the resolution? That's the question that's being said. And I'd just like your motion on the table to determine exactly what you're asking, General Manager.
Madam Chair, mm-hmm. Would it make sense for me to move the adoption of the entire General Manager's proposal subject to whatever amendment?
Is there a second? Mm-hmm. Second. Okay. All right. Now, any amendments? Mr. Jim.
Yeah, let me, this will be my sixth budget cycle, mm-hmm. and we have this discussion every year. What do we include in the docket or not? And I remember 4 years ago, Mr. Zimmerman, Mr. Benjamin, and myself were pushing the indexing concept every 2 years based on the consumer price index. Of course, we're in the second cycle year now, and that's why some of the proposals are on the table the way they are. It seems to me, and we did see this through experience, that we want to have a public docket that has as many options on there as we can get on there, recognizing based on the feedback we get, some of the final decisions will, in fact, probably not approve some of those. But if we don't have them on the docket, then we don't have the option of turning them down and not knowing the impact of it. So I certainly would encourage my colleagues to be as broad as they can on including items in the docket, recognizing after feedback and after further discussion and input from the general manager and staff that we may decide ultimately not to approve some of those items. So that's what I would encourage my colleagues to consider.
Thank you, Mr. Giancola. Mr. Knight?
Since this is my first meeting, not to mention budget, my gut thought here is that I would err on the side of putting it all on the docket so that you have all those options available. You can hear from the public on a wide range of issues, and then you make the tough decisions after you've heard from them. And I would not make a preliminary decision of taking something off at this stage, so I would support a motion that says we put as much as we can on the docket, and then let the public feedback whatever they want to provide.
Okay. Are there any other changes then that we're offering?
Yeah, with respect to the flat fare, I would support putting it on the docket for further discussion. I really don't think it's going to work. I hope we could get some analysis of what maintaining a status quo would achieve, or if part of the goal is really to discourage paper tickets, a further surcharge on the paper ticket. But what are the revenue implications of that?
Okay, so which one, what are you putting on?
To the potential discussion, a retention of the paper ticket with its current pricing, but with a substantial penalty to the user, as opposed to saying everybody should pay $6 to have a paper ticket. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Is there objection to that?
Could I second that?
Yes.
An amendment to keep
keep the option open that both Ms. Hines and several others have raised about this issue. If we do not allow for an expansion of consideration in this area, we preclude the board taking any other action other than that after the public hearing. So I think it's important to preserve the array of options for the board around this set of issues around paper and single trip.
Okay. And for just for the benefit of those that are not have Ms. Hines' information, and Ms. Hines basically expressed the same concern that the $4 to $6 piece or, and the paper fare, both issues raised, I think, some concern for the riders and the flexibility of that of the riders in order to, I think, have as much equity for people that are using the system, so that we will keep that option open. Okay. Are there any others that we need to include in the docket? Mr. Downey, Ben?
I just, a clarification that has just been provided, that my motion was to include all of the general managers' fair proposals in the docket for the public hearing.
Right.
What I'm told is the motion is actually to approve the public hearing, approve going to public hearing.
It is to go, yes,
yeah,
to go
right.
to public hearing,
yeah.
Yes. Any others? Yes.
Okay. This is going to sound a bit administrative. 2 years ago, the board authorized a 5 cent a station potential fare surcharge for capital improvements. And it was approved, went through the hearing process, it was approved. Because of the time from the hearing process and the difficulty of getting any agreement, that authority has lapsed in effect. The authorization, or the hearing process and the board's authorization. And I would ask that we add that language, the same language that the board adopted 2 years ago, to restore the option for future consideration. It has simply expired for lack of any timely action on it, and I would ask that the same language be put back into the docket for the public hearing.
Mr. Bolger just wanted a clearer explanation of what you're asking. You're asking about the union station, the surcharge.
It was a surcharge for all stations.
For all stations.
Okay. But it's on a station-by-station basis. It allows a proposal for enhancements at an individual station to be brought to the board for an authorization of capital outlay. The 5 cents can be bonded for funding that capital improvement. It was a flexibility the board thought made a lot of sense about solving individual station and community problems that needed fixing, but they didn't necessarily fit in the overall capital budget. It creates an authority. It does not exercise the authority. It simply keeps open this as an option for the board in the future.
And that's where it was.
Mr. Downs, is it 5 cents on entry and 5 cents on exit? And what are the 9 stations that this would affect?
It's 5 cents for use.
It's 10 cents?
It's 5 cents a trip.
Okay.
And
it does not specifically affect any station that allows a jurisdiction to bring in recommendations to the board for a specific capital improvement. If the board approves the
5 cents, then that capital improvement can use this funding source going forward.
And just to Mr. Downs' addition, then we could allow it then for each of the jurisdictions and two per jurisdiction. It's one of the ways that we have worked on it before. And that would be one.
Is there any other comment? I have a question.
That one. Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, let me just clarify or add to what Mr. Downs said. At the time when we considered this, Union Station was one of the stations, Roslyn was another station, and in the Maryland side, it was yet to be determined. So I just wanted to clarify, there was a couple stations identified, and it was just that we never exercised that option, and I think it's appropriate that we add it back into the mix.
And I'm just simply adding it back in. We make it clear that it's all three jurisdictions having the same options. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I feel like Mr. Dyke. I feel like this is my first meeting, and it's not. This is an extraordinarily frustrating discussion for me because this is one of the most significant decisions that we make as a board, and it feels unnaturally crammed into a dialogue of about 15 to 20 minutes that doesn't give it the sufficiency of dialogue to impact the resolution appropriately. We have, certainly we have the materials to review, the resolution, et cetera, but the dynamic of discussion with colleagues, discussion with the general manager is part of the process by which we frame issues that need consideration. And I'm concerned that we have not had sufficient dialogue to discuss all the issues that may be appropriately included in the docket because they're arising right now in an ad hoc fashion that is dangerously loose in my mind. And I don't want to foreclose issues that need to be examined because we don't have sufficient time to discuss it. It just doesn't feel, and maybe I am too much of a novice at this moment, but it doesn't feel comfortable to me at all that we are giving this issue sufficient discussion from a policy perspective to be able to make this happen. Now, if help me to understand the next step, the process, so that I can get comfortable that we will have adequate opportunity to enhance this resolution with additional options for consideration. If I go home tonight and wake up in the middle of the night and decide I need to add something to this resolution, or if a dialogue with board members, or if more dialogue this morning, raises that issue. Please help me to understand where we are in that regard, because I'm not comfortable at all.
The resolution that you will see at the board on the 23rd is a resolution to go out to the public for public hearing and public input process. And it will go out with the opportunity for staff to develop the dialogue that must take place with the public on the general manager's proposed budget as it sits on the table today, and any other considerations that the board would like to see or not see in that discussion. And hopefully much of what we have said here has been formed by all the prior meetings that we've had. We had budget preparation or workshop meetings as guidance to the general manager building his budget. We had a fair policy that we examined and we adopted, and we said fair increases should be built around that. We had a proposal about what level of fair increase might occur. And so what I see today is the general manager having taken that information, structured a budget, and we should be prepared to go out to the public to, A, discuss that budget and any additional refining of that budget in order to have a as broad a discussion as possible. And so when we say rather than completely remove the paper fare surcharge piece, we're saying, okay, we want to be able to leave that on so that when the public comes forward, they can tell us whether they like it or not and when we have a budget that we can frame to be adopted. So what are those, any additional pieces that we're saying to the general manager's budget that we want to have in the public discussion? Because by regulation, we must have clear notice before going out to know what we will discuss.
And that's the central point of my question.
Mm-hmm.
The process that the general manager's gone through and is an appropriate process. I'm not uncomfortable with that at all. It's the step that we're at right now where we formalize that docket for options that can be considered in the budget. And that's the one that I want to make sure that we don't foreclose our opportunity prematurely to examine all the issues that may need to join that docket. Now, 2 weeks from now, I may not have anything else to offer. I will say that clearly. But to me, as I hear the dialogue around the table, it sounds like there are some ideas that are still coming together in terms of board members. And I could be wrong in that, in terms of my own mind, as I see this. So that's where I am, and what will be the step to amend this resolution, and what is the timing for that, so that any additional thoughts or ideas that need to go forward can be included. So that's the question.
Staff wants to be prepared to have it go out after being approved at the 23rd meeting. So you 26th meeting, so that any changes made today or any changes made at the board table. Mr. Acosta.
Yes, in addition to Mr. Downey's proposal about the flat fare search and paper fare surcharge, I'd also like to put the two-zone proposal back on the table so you would actually have three alternatives for the public to respond to with respect to paper cards.
Okay, so the 4 and 6 zones. Is there any objection to hearing that? Yes. Mr. Barnes.
Thank you. I want to ask Mr. Giancola a question because I was struck by his comment earlier about the effort in past years to look at indexing and whether it would make any sense, Tony, to put on this docket question to our communities whether how they think about that policy approach. We've talked about it on the board before, and I wonder whether it would be appropriate to put it out there for discussion for the community to react to the idea that they could anticipate fares are going to go up every couple of years and that it'll probably be indexed. Is that something we ought to think about?
I see no objection to that now.
And
well, then I would move we add it to the docket.
Second. Let me just clarify. You have a second. We have a policy that we index, and so are we simply saying, Mr. Barnes? Can I just get a clarification? Are we saying we want it on the docket, or we want to have a discussion with our public about the fact that we can index fares?
I was just also asking in terms of clarification. One other opportunity is that in the public hearing docket, you get the opinion on it's an automatic every 2 years CPI increase. I mean, that's one way to put it on the docket for consideration.
Well, very similar to Social Security, it didn't go up. You know, if you have a mom that gets Social Security benefits, you get the phone, how come it didn't bump up? And it hardly went up at all this year, 1.something%. So the way, Rich, as you framed it, I think the public, back to Mike's comment, needs to, and we weren't here when this was done, so this is something that we just inherited. I'm sure, Tony, it was a great indexing policy, but when you go to the public hearing, I think it would be great to be able to have that conversation with the public who have no idea what this is all about.
Just to add a little bit to, in a pure sense, indexing is automatic. You know, it's not necessarily reviewed. But the way we set it up was it would still be reviewed, even though we'd be considering it every 2 years. And certainly, as Mr. Barnes suggested, we should be getting feedback on that as well.
Just a procedural question. Are you going to continue to run through a list of things you thought you heard us talk about? Because I want to make sure the points were raised about the
yes.
pension, about metro access and privatization. You're going to run through all those, and then that's going to be added to Mark's motion. Is that process?
The purpose of the docket is to ensure that we go to the public for actions that we can take in terms of developing our budget and the impact it has on the users. I thought I heard from you was the fact that we needed to hear and have a discussion, both here and with our public, about the impact of pensions and that. And I think that is what we, as one, the board here in meeting, but also it is a useful discussion with our public for them to understand what that process is in which we are.
I guess I was getting at it. Yeah. We ought to let you finish your list so we know what you gleaned from what we said, and then we can make a determination.
And I'm looking at things that must be advertised in order for us to approve a budget to include the choices that we wish to approve.
Okay.
All right. The last that was added was the indexing and putting the automatic indexing on the dock. All those in favor?
May I yes. just ask what is, do you mean that it's an automatic consideration, or you're saying every 2 years we're asking the public if their fares should just go up every 2 years automatically without some affirmative action?
I think what we have is that we have a policy to index, and I think what's being asked is, can we simply automatically hear from the public whether or not we want to automatically implement the fare increase based on the CPI index that's there. I think it's the CPI. Yes, it is CPI. That's and this was the discussion that brought us to a lack of raising fares for decades and trying to find the appropriate revenue to go to the public on, with the public being engaged and understanding what they should anticipate as possible fare increases based on the way they live every day. And that's the issue here. And so we're talking about adding that one. Is that, Ms. Bowser?
Yeah, I've been persuaded not to move on the bus because I don't think we're going to have the votes today. But I will want to have some conversation with staff between now and 2 weeks from now.
And I think it's good that we can have those conversations in the budget meetings, finance meetings that come forward, or any special budget meetings that we have for it.
But okay. I would like to say this, Madam Chair. I mean, I do think that there, and I share in Alvin's sentiment that there are a number of very important and complicated issues that have been added to the resolution today. And so I'm willing to move forward today, but I do think that there is a lot of conversation that needs to happen between now and 2 weeks from now.
Understand that this is, we and the public are just beginning our discussions. So, I mean, this is not the end. The only thing that we must do today is to ensure, as we move to the board on the 26th and we advertise this budget for any increases that should take place, that we have everything that we want on the table at this time.
But just as a point of clarification, mm-hmm. if I might, we are ensuring the authorization of a resolution to be brought forward to the board. We are not finalizing the resolution for consideration. There will be opportunity for further dialogue at the board meeting and amendment of that resolution before it is approved. Do we need a work session prior to that board meeting to discuss and modify that resolution, or should, standpoint, would that take place during the board meeting?
May I offer a suggestion to you? Because the purpose of this is to provide staff, and not only the board, the opportunity to provide the ample analysis and information to us so that we are advertising something that will be appropriate for the public hearings. Secondly, you have an opportunity to vet questions and be prepared at the board meeting to ask, offer amendments. The timing is important because of the regulatory guidelines we have. So if you have a question, it's okay to ask a question. I think if the arises to amendment that you would like to see, at least you have done the legwork with the staff to determine that we're not trying to put something at the board table that may not really be vetted well and would work well. That's process piece of it.
I would have a suggestion is if you have another proposal that you'd like to add to the docket, I would suggest maybe perhaps getting it to the staff by next week and also have that circulated to the board before the meeting, at least a week ahead of time, so we're not caught off guards with respect to a new proposal, but also allow them to analyze the impacts and let us know kind of what to expect if that was implemented. So, you know, if we can make a commitment to get a proposal by the end of next, or middle of next week, that would be a good thing to do.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, just having been through this once, and some others have been through it more often, mm-hmm. but the point is, nothing that goes onto the docket commits us to adopt that at the end of the day, but anything that doesn't go on the docket is off the table completely. So we, right.
That is it. Okay. All right. Let me see if I can go over what we have. We have the general manager's budget as proposed, and we have added first retaining the paper fare surcharge, adding the
Adding a surcharge.
Yeah. Providing this one, Mr. Bolger, I want to make sure. Are we providing the cost savings from the GM's budget as part? This is part of a public input process that you want to have.
To validating.
The general manager will come back to us with explanation of what savings have occurred, but not part of a docket. The other is the enhancement with the five cents for surcharge somewhere along the way. Yes. Okay. And the third one is the index, automatic index. Did I leave one off?
No.
Oh, the two zones. Thank you.
The
two zone proposals. Okay.
I had thought that the privatization function that I suggested would also be on the docket.
But it doesn't. It is not. The docket is only for changes that the customer will experience in the service delivery. If we have changes in our bus service, if we have changes in our fares, we have to advertise those. So the public, what you would like to see is. In our public discussion in the town meetings, mm-hmm. and we haven't decided whether the public hearing town meetings are going to be all one or not, but in that environment in which we're having with the public, that's what you want to hear, those things that you've asked.
Well, it doesn't have to, look, that's our first budget, so, and I share Alvin's concern, you know, what's on and off is more to said, if you don't get it on, then you can't do anything about it. Okay, so.
So
there's boundaries.
That's
no one's explained that it's only fares, gentlemen.
It is fares.
Service. Okay, all right, let me then say, all right, if we privatize the parking garage, is that a service, a function, or?
It's a budget.
It is a budget item that I would say you would want to ask the general manager to look at as mm-hmm. considerations for bringing forth savings in the future. Not necessarily part of this budget, I would think, considering you've structured an entire budget. But they are savings that you would put on the table, and they could come back to us during the year to determine how we realize revenue from that.
This is really a question in the way of enhanced information for the budget, just as we talked about in terms of cost savings. Mm-hmm. Unless I misunderstood Mr. Giancola's question a moment ago, with respect to the positions that are being requested in the budget. I think part of his question was how many of those are short-term or gear-up type positions that are not permanent. I think that would be enhanced information, or if any of them are, as a part of what goes forward. The other piece that strikes me as maybe is important as enhanced information, and it certainly will be discussed as a part of the budget, is we are doing a substantial amount of gear-up for the Silver Line. That is ramping up costs dramatically. but it does not, but this budget certainly is not going to reflect the revenue that will be in, the enhanced revenue that will come in future years. And I think it would be important from a, to more precisely discuss the relationship between the gear up costs and the increase in revenue once the silver line comes on, to create a little more context in terms of the revenue and cost,
right,
particularly on the positions.
And let me just put this, I guess I didn't say it earlier, that these are budget questions to the staff and the general manager to come back either in writing as well as in presentations to us.
Those would be key points that would be benchmarks in the opening part of the dialogue around the budget.
Okay. Mr. Downs, is there another?
Well, I appreciate the multi-year forecasting process. The board needs to be serious and establish a time frame for a multi-year business plan. That's the place where all of those issues are drawn to the fore. The next 4 or 5 years worth of ridership forecast, cost forecast, and the other trends that we have to incorporate. We have not done that. We still haven't finished the strategic planning process yet and need to move on before we sit here next year doing the same thing, so we have a better context for understanding the longer-term implications of the next 12-month budget, because they all trail into the next 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Any other discussions about the docket? With hearing none,
One question.
Yes.
And once again, I apologize. This is my first meeting, so I just want to make sure I understand. Mayor Yule raised a point that I thought was very important that had to do with metro access and the fact that that's a major budget driver. And to the extent, one of the issues I had wanted to raise was, what do we do as far as continuing certification of who's eligible for metro access as a factor in looking at containing cost? Is that something that needed to be added to the docket specifically, or is that just falls in that broad category of general discussion?
No, that is not an issue to raise for the docket. It is a question regarding, I think, really is to come back to you. We already have a lot of information, but to come back and share with you the progress of the conditional qualifications for metro access.
We're not seeing anywhere near the growth in ridership we did 2 years ago.
Yeah, and actually, we've seen a reduction.
Okay.
Yeah. If hearing that, I think we need to move the item that's on the motion that's on the table. All those in favor of the resolution as amended to go out for
questions? I apologize. Mm-hmm. I just you had mentioned earlier about another Mary Hines who's not here, and I wanted to make sure that you were able to capture those if you wanted to.
I think we have included them. One is the peak-to-peak issue is included here. The other is the pass. Let me see if I'm reading it right. Yes, it was the flexibility in the use of the, yes, the peak-to-peak was flexibility. The other was instead of the keeping the zones in, the two zones of $4 and $6 charge there, the effect of this. And she had offered a proposal, which I think is what we're looking at here. Consider a day pass that prices anywhere from 12 to 15 for any time travel on off-peak travel. And I think that would that would be the one to include.
Yeah.
And that is the only other one that is a docket related one. Yes. So we would include that one in the docket related.
Yes.
And I think, and let me just go through her explanation, because I think she's looking for us to offer to our customers something that can be a more substantial fare media for families or others that are traveling over a larger period of time, recognizing one service impact that we've had and the inability versus the larger increase that you would see in off-peak. Okay. All right. With those amendments, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. That takes care of the resolution. Then I would simply ask everybody if you have any other questions between now and meeting, board meeting, that you provide your questions to the general manager and we will have them circulated, and any discussions and answers that we need to have at the board will have had the analysis and vetting that's needed. In general, we have had workshops or budget meetings over the course of this, and one of the questions that I will have for you is whether or not we need to put on the docket on our calendars an additional meeting on January 19th as a possible way of getting started in this process. And I think we'll ask you for feedback on your calendars in terms of doing that. I'll leave it as an open question for now, and then we will look at whether or not it's an opportunity to do so. There will be a lot of I think what we will want to know is that we have as much discussion as possible before, so that we do not push our calendar, as we've done in prior years, to the almost approval time. So I think it's better to do more early than to do more later.
We could actually be prepared next week to talk, if it was contained just to the fair and the recommendations on some of the recommendations you made today, the passes, the two-zone. We'd be prepared to do that analysis. I'm not sure we'd be prepared to do the broader analysis, whether it's privatization or any of the other management things. We would not have time to do that. If we limited it to the fair and the tariffs, we'd be ready for that. For the 19th.
Is that a let me see, am I surprising my board members too much with the date that is coming forward? Because I think the questions, in responding to the questions about being able to have this resolution before the board on the 26th, that there has been ample discussion or ample opportunities to bring forward any other ideas.
Now, what time are you proposing on the 19th? Because I wouldn't be available in the morning. Certainly available in the afternoon.
Okay. Let me do it this way. Let me offer you the 19th and ask Laura, the secretary, to look at time elements to see whether or not we can accomplish this. Yes. Yes. And we will try and target it such that we are sensitive to calendars and be able to offer you some options there. Any other questions? Hearing none, I want to thank everybody and call the Finance Committee adjourned at this time. I think we have everything. Yes, everything accomplished here. We're adjourned, and the next item is
customer service.
And the marketing. Yeah.
How about a 3-minute break?
Yes,
good
idea.